Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. You may or may not know that Utah has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, especially among young men. And we're in the middle of a so-called suicide belt, which runs through the Rockies. Some experts theorize that perhaps suicides are prevalence in these rural areas where people don't have as much access to mental health services. We hear from time to time high-profile cases of suicide and perhaps even more troubling, those who are that are not in the news. We know that this goes on in many of our communities, and it's very hard for many to talk about this. But experts are telling us that one thing we should do, should talk about it, and in the right way. And that's our subject for the program today. We bring in our guest for the hour, Kim Kettle, who's with Valley Mental Health. Kim Kettle, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Kim Kettle has a master's in social work from University of Utah, worked with children ages 12 to 24 and their families for 16 years, has presented locally, nationally on self-harm, dialectical behavior therapy, and specializing how to work with difficult-to-treat and or highly suicidal individuals. And in addition to working for Valley Mental Health, Kim Kettle is part owner of a private consulting therapy business called Life Solutions. We also bring in Greg Hudnall, who is Provo School District's Director of Student Services. Greg Hudnall, welcome to the program.
Great, thank you.
Greg Hudnall also founded Utah Hope Task Force. We'll talk about that as well and some experiences. To begin, I wanted to have our guests listen with me to a brief conversation I had yesterday with Leslie Kiesel, who is superintendent of the North San Pete School District. This is an area that was hit very hard by suicide. According to an article by Sam Penrod in KSL, in 2011, at least 14 people living within the boundaries of North San Pete School District took their own lives. This would be, I assume, mostly adults. There was one high-profile case, a young man, Tyler Johnson, took his own life, a recent graduate, I believe, of North San Pete High School. This area, as you probably know, the entire county has some 25,000 people, so this would only be part of the county. North San Pete School District, the big town there would be Mount Pleasant. And with all of these suicides, of course, it hit the community very hard. And this is what the superintendent there, Leslie Kiesel, had to say about that, my conversation from yesterday.
Well, whenever you hear of a suicide, we're very interconnected in living in rural Utah. And in working in education, you're connected with those kids. And we haven't had recently students commit suicide, but you have adults in the community, but you connect with those adults, usually build a relationship with them in the school setting, and so you remain connected. And so it is a difficult thing for all of us when we hear that someone has taken their life.
And what about the students? What everybody's interconnected in maybe an even closer way in a rural community like that. When students hear about a suicide, what is their reaction?
Well, it's not unlike the adults. There's just a certain amount of grieving that goes on, and it's suicide is difficult to understand And so what we're trying to do in our district is we're trying to be more open and talk more about it. And we had Greg Hundle come down and met with all of our staff as well as community leaders and talk to us about what possibly we could do, and certainly about being more open and talking more with our students. And we're currently in the process of forming an alliance with NAMI and see if we can't be more intent about getting programs into the schools that will direction in talking about suicide and helping students to know where to report, where they get students that may be feeling depressed, know where they can turn, and also if they have friends that they're concerned about, know who they can go to and who they can report to and where they can seek out help.
This question of openness, that seems to be a change with the way I think a lot of people immediately think, you know, that in the past anyway, have dealt with suicide. Let's just not talk about it. But the experts, I guess, are telling us we should talk about it.
Right. And it was even interesting when we met with, in the meeting that we had with community leaders, and some of these are ecclesiastic leaders, and they often say, you know, they're one of the first people to visit homes when a suicide has occurred, but they said it's rare that the family will come right out and talk about what was the cause of death. And so I think, you know, right down to the family of a victim of suicide, maybe we need to open the door a little bit and be willing to talk a little bit more, and perhaps we can help someone out in the future. Talk about signs that were recognized, and perhaps in hindsight, we recognize things that we could do differently. We certainly need to know about those things.
I wonder if you worry as an educator, if you worry about maybe one of the arguments against talking openly, at least in the past, has been. Sometimes you get a rash of copycat. You know, maybe a young person is depressed, and if they hear about someone else, that depresses them further, or they hear about the way someone did it, and so that was an argument always in the past, at least from what I've heard, to not talking about it.
Well, you certainly heard about incidents of copycat suicides, and that would be very tragic. But I think when we talk about talking about it, I think timing is a thing. If we hear of a suicide, we're all very concerned, and we always think, what can we do? What more can we do? But I think we need to keep it in the forefront of our minds all the time. I think we need to be talking about what to do to prevent suicides all year long, not just when we have an incident happen in our area, but let's talk about it as that, just like any other kind of let's talk about any kind of mental health issue, and just like treat it like a physical health issue. We certainly teach and talk about physical illnesses, and it doesn't necessarily need to be an outbreak of something contagious disease, that we do that. We need to do the same about suicide. We need to be willing to talk about what are the causes of suicide, and how does good mental health play into that, or poor mental health play into that?
So in North St. Pete School District, what are the kinds of things that you're implementing, that you're trying there?
Well, you look at things, and I think you always have to keep look at prevention. You always have to look at drug and alcohol prevention. And again, just talk about good mental health.
I'm sure that you've gotten a lot of response there.
You know, I think our work with Greg Hundle kind of formed a connection with us with NAMI, and now we have school counselors in forming this alliance with NAMI, and I think we'll bring more people into our district, and we'll continue to learn and to talk.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Leslie Kiesel, who is superintendent of the North St. Pete School District, in 2011, at least 14 people living within the boundaries of that district, not necessarily children, but took their own lives. It's impacted the community, and they are reacting. And there are several issues to talk about there. I want to bring in first Mr. Hudnall. North St. Pete apparently brought you in to talk to them.
Yeah, I work with schools throughout the state, and when districts are struggling with the loss of a child, we try to go in and provide support where A lot of people believe it's a school-related issue, and we try to help them understand that it really is a community and society issue. So the goal is to help strengthen the school, but then also to reach out to the community to develop a broad-based support to do as much as you can to prevent any more suicides in the future.
Now, you understand you became a suicide prevention advocate after a traumatic experience you had as a new school principal.
You know, I did. About 15, 16 years ago, I got a call one New Year's Eve from the Provo Police Department that there was a park next to my school, and they asked me to come down and help identify the 14-year-old who had taken his life. And to this day, I remember it was one of the most traumatic experiences. And I went down to the park, and when I got done, I walked back to my car, and I literally threw up and just sat and sobbed. And you know, and I thought to myself, how could such a handsome young man see suicide as an option? And so from that, I just vowed that I would do everything I could to help kids across the state of Utah to get help and prevent seeing suicide as an option.
And out of that, developed into the Hope Task Force?
We do. We have a Utah County Hope Task Force that we have about 60 individuals, professionals, and volunteers that serve on it. We do a statewide suicide prevention conference for educators and mental health workers in partnership with BYU. We have a suicide walk. We actually do training where we go out and do presentations, and we've trained about 15,000 people across the state of Utah. We also have programs where we train, work with medical doctors, where we train them on how to get help when they identify children struggling with depression. A lot of variety approaches. We have a support group. We have a group that's offered by our mental health agency down here in Provo that kids that have attempted, research shows that a child who has attempted suicide is 50% more likely to attempt again versus someone that hasn't. So we've tried to follow the Surgeon General's model of really providing support as a community, not just as to the schools.
And I'll skip ahead a bit. We'll talk about this a little later in the program, but there are programs, including yours, that have been very successful in reducing, preventing suicides. Let's bring in Kim Kettle. As you were listening to the superintendent there, I wonder if anything was striking a chord. And I'm wondering especially this idea of people just not wanting to talk about it. Do you encounter that?
You know, we actually encounter that a lot. I have done just recently a Union Middle School, which is a local school here in Salt Lake. They had 3 suicides within a 6-month period of time, and they asked me to come out and speak with both the parents and adults. They had an after-hours resource that parents could come, and the kids came as well. And I was amazed at people are afraid to talk about it, because I do think they fear that if they do talk about it, that people will act on it. And what we want people to understand is that if you are thinking about or contemplating taking your own life, that by talking about it isn't going to necessarily make you do it. In fact, it's out in the open. I am frequently trying to educate parents when they finally bring somebody in to meet with us. They might be bringing them in thinking, my child's a little bit depressed or a little bit off. And it is amazing to me when I ask the question, have you thought about or do you currently have a plan to hurt yourself or kill yourself? And most of them tell me, yes, that they do. And that scares parents. And so it is that educating piece of it's our own fear of what the answer might be, and we've got to deal with that, because if we look horrified and aren't able to talk about it as adults, then we aren't able to help our kids through this or young people through this, and they need to be able to feel like they can come to us and that we will know what to do and be calm about it and not react.
Mr. Hudnall, I'm guessing you've seen the same thing, that fears that parents have or teachers, perhaps, that you're going to encourage suicide if you talk about it.
Yeah, very much so. It's a taboo in our society. We're afraid that if we do talk about it, it's going to ignite others. And there is that worry. I mean, I think it's a valid worry, but most children, and I've been involved with about 45 suicides now, And most students, most children don't want to die. They're reaching out for help, but they're in so much pain that they don't have the lifelong experiences that we do as adults, and they want the pain to go away. And so the more we talk about it, the more we can help identify those young people to get help. And Kim is right. It, everywhere we go, we presented one time to the League of Cities to all the mayors across the state, and I had one mayor come up to me and said, I don't want you coming into my community. And I thought, you know, you're the one that's going to deal with more suicides. And as I've watched that community, they have, because the suicide is already out there. If you go to the video games that kids are playing, the music they're listening to, the television shows, the movies that are out there, suicide has become a common practice on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing when you talk to kids and you ask the question, how many of you know a friend who has talked about hurting themselves? 90% of the kids will raise their hands. Mm-hmm. The discussion is already out there. We as adults now have to be part of that discussion instead of shying away from it.
Kim Kettle, are teenagers especially vulnerable? And if so, why?
You know, teenagers are vulnerable, and this is primarily why most teenagers are impulsive. And so, for example, they might be in a good place at one moment, and then a breakup of a boyfriend, girlfriend, or something happens, and their emotions get out of control, and they might impulsively do something that could end their life. And what we also know about male suicide being, completed suicide being higher, is because they do use more lethal means. And so a lot of parents who are not aware of, you know, they're like, it wouldn't happen to my kid, or this isn't an issue for us, also have weapons and things in the home that kids are very aware of how to find weapons, how to find means to complete suicide if they choose to. And so I think that can't ever be overlooked.
Yeah, I believe a statistic I was reading, I didn't know this before, women are more likely to try, but men are more likely to succeed. Is that, and that's the general statistics. Greg Hudnall, I believe one of the factors, I suppose not only with teens, but with anyone who is suicidal, is the thought that I'm the only one that's going through this.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. One thing that I think our listeners need to be aware of is that state of Utah, when you talk about the region, the state of Utah is ninth in the nation for our completion rate for that age group of 13 to 18. But when you add adults, so if you go from birth to death age group in Utah, we're up in the 16th range. And so, you know, it is frightening to, you know, to see what our kids are what our kids are dealing with. And the more, I think Kim brought up a very good point, accessibility and other things with weapons, and, you know, your discussion of girl, that we actually have more females attempt than males. You know, the key is for us to be able to reach out there and provide that support. But for us, you know, the mental health agencies are the providers. We try to be that educational piece that goes out and does the training so that teachers are able to identify and get the help, because they do, that child does feel helpless and hopeless, and they do think they're the only one. And they think they're the only one going through it. Although, if you look at the research, about 8 out of 10 children will give some sort of sign that they are going to take their life, whether it's giving away a prized possession, a guitar, favorite clothes, music or something to a friend. We had a young man from a very, very good family whose father had given him a watch for Christmas, and the day before he took his life, he gave it to his best friend and said, after tomorrow, I'm not going to need this anymore. So that's one of those things that we try to do, is educate those peers, educate those parents what to look for, what to watch for, the coaches, the church leaders, the individuals that are involved with these young people, teachers, so that when they see these signs, then we can start following up, provide that support to intervene.
If you just joined us, we're talking about suicide in Utah. Utah has one of the highest rates in the nation, especially among young men. We're in the middle of the suicide belt, which runs through the Rockies. Theories there are more rural areas perhaps don't have as much access to mental health services, although there's no definitive reason given why in the Rockies a higher suicide rate. Experts do say there are programs that work in preventing suicide. We'll be talking about those, what we can do. One thing we should do is to talk about it, as we've been hearing from our guests, Greg Hudnall, who is Provo School District's Director of Student Services, and Kim Kettle, who's with the Valley Mental Health. You're welcome to join this conversation at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. A little bit later, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be bringing in briefly Kelly Peterman with the Trevor Project, Senior Crisis Services Manager, who helps gay teens in crisis. Kim Kettle, tell us other warning signs. What can we look for if we're concerned and want to help?
You know, it's some of the things that I think you want to look for, and every child is individual in what they see, in what you might see in them. Some of the common things that you want to look for, though, are any kind of suicidal talk and anything that might sound as though if somebody throws something out there just to kind of see what people will say or think, and then if it's not received well, they might say, just kidding, I don't really mean that. And those might be signs that you want to look for. The other things is obsession about death or loss of interest in activities that they formerly were engaged in. So a lot of isolation, withdrawal, any kind of mood swings or problems with eating, sleeping too much, any kind of increased drug use or agitated behavior, anxiety, those kinds of things would be some signs to look for. And I think that it's important that the individuals who know these people know what's off and what's not, and it's having good relationships and being able to get to know people enough that you're like, something's not right. And to be aware that if something's not right, you are better going to somebody who you think can help you than to not say anything at all should something happen where there is a completed suicide.
And how, if somebody, especially if someone says something, you know, jump in and talk about it, but I think a lot of us feel like a bull in a china shop. How do you have that conversation?
You know, I honestly, one of the things that I have people do is I think you just look and say, you know, you seem like you're feeling pretty miserable about things. Have you ever considered hurting yourself, or have you ever thought about suicide? And I just ask the question, and it's amazing to me when you just say it like that, how often people come out and they are willing to talk about it. I think, again, it is really important that the person who is asking that does not react to whatever the answer is. And to kind of normalize it a little bit, that somebody who's going through this, I can understand how you're feeling really sad and you might feel like there's no way out. And I want to help you. What can we do? And that together we'll find, you know, an answer to this.
Mm-hmm. Greg Hudnall, same question. What if you think you should have a conversation with someone who you think is suicidal, what to say?
You know, I think Kim hit it right on. One of the things that we try to teach our young people and our parents and our adults is the most important thing is to ask the question, but then to always listen. Too many times we have become such a fast-paced society that we want to fix it immediately. And every child grieves differently. Every child deals with depression and other stressors in their life differently. But we have a tendency to try to fix it. And there are sometimes it's not a quick fix. And so we try to teach our students and parents and others to ask the questions, but then to be quiet and just to listen and try to provide as much support to that individual. And one of the models we use in our program is that every child needs a significant other. Mm-hmm. And so and we see this with a lot of kids that are loners, that are maybe outcasts for a variety of reasons. We try to find ways that we can include them and make sure that they feel that they are important and that someone is looking out for them.
We're talking with Greg Hudnall with the Provo School District and with Kim Kettle, who's with Valley Mental Health. After a brief break, which is next, we're going to continue with them and also bring in Kelly Peterman with the Trevor Project. Our subject is suicide in Utah, what we can do to prevent suicides. And you're welcome to join the conversation at 1-800-826-1495 or email at upraxis@gmail.com. More after this break.
Hi, this is Blair Larson, host of Fresh Folk. On the show this week, I feature the harmonious music of Bev Barnett and Greg Newlin, and the new image-based lyrical songs of Heather Steika. I'll also play songs from new albums by Bill Andrews, Rebecca Zapin, and Billy Mitchell, to name a few. Tune in and listen this Saturday at 8 p.m. to Fresh Folk on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Cache Valley Hospital Emergency Services in North Logan, offering 24-hour care by University of Utah physicians. Information is at cvsh.com.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and as we've been saying, Utah sits right in the middle of the suicide belt. Cheery news for us, but it's a problem that we all need to deal with, and that's the problem in and of itself. It seems that many of us don't deal with this. Would rather just not talk about suicide, but experts are telling us that's exactly what we should do. We have a person in our lives we suspect is suicidal. We need to talk to that person and let them know that they have someone who cares and to get them some help. Hard to do, but very necessary. There are programs that work, and there are segments of our society in special danger. Teenagers, the elderly, and one segment of population of concern, teens, gay teens, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender teens, and there's a organization that is helping, the Trevor Project. And we bring in, or we were going to bring in, Kelly Peterman. We'll try to reconnect with Kelly Peterman. Trevor Project helps LGBT teens in a crisis. While we're working on that, I want to turn back to...
Maybe I could talk a little bit about our Hope Squad that we've developed across the state.
Thank you. Go ahead.
It's a program. One of the things, as you look at the research for adolescents that are struggling with depression and are suicidal, is that in 90% of the cases, they won't go to an adult for whatever reason. But they will talk to a peer. And one of the things that we did in Provo School District, we were averaging 1 to 2 suicides a year for 6 to 7 years as we started tracking it in 1998, 1999. And so as we brought our counselors together and our psychologists and our social workers, we looked at the best ways to really help. And one of the ways we developed was our Hope Squad. So at Tempview High School, a population of about 1,800 students, we asked every student in the school in one of their English classes to fill out a survey. If you were struggling with depression and you feel you really needed to talk to someone, identify 3 or 4 people that you would go to. And it was fascinating as we collected all of those slips and started reading through them that the same names started coming to the top, and they weren't the cheerleaders, they weren't the athletes, they weren't the student body officers. They were mostly kids that were seen as non-judgmental, very caring, very willing to reach out. And so we came up with, there was about 40 names that kept coming to the top. We took those 40 students and we started training and working with them and started teaching them about mental illness, depression, and other things, how to interact appropriately, how to reach out, when to report, when to go to an adult to get help, and how to be a positive influence for that student. The program was so successful that we then went to the middle school, and now we have components of it even in the elementary school, and we now have it in schools throughout the state. But just in our tracking in Provo, because of our work with the students and what we do to train all of our teachers and our staff and the community help, we haven't had a suicide in 6 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, success with this.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Our numbers have gone up for kids that have attempted, but I think that's because what we're able to do is now get help And we work very closely with Wasatch Mental Health and IHC, where when those students are immediately identified, and along with our police department, we're able to work with the families and get them into the emergency room, the psychiatric unit, the help from Wasatch immediately. And it's been a godsend, because it's been amazing what we've been able to do to save children's lives in our community.
What do the kids on the Hope Squads say? What's their reaction?
They love it. And in fact, it's been fun to watch it grow. Up at Tent View, they'll have a suicide prevention week, and one day they'll have everybody wear yellow. And they'll have activities, different things, and it's actually become so popular that it's become one of the administrators and social workers and counselors have made it a club. And it's become probably one of the most popular clubs in the school. And so it's being seen as a positive support instead of a negative.
If you just joined us, we're talking about suicide in Utah. Our guests for the hour, Greg Hudnall with Provo School District, Kim Kettle with Valley Mental Health. We're going to bring in shortly Kelly Peterman with the Trevor Project. But right now we have a caller we want to bring in. Judy, I believe, in Provo.
Yes, I just recently moved here to Provo, and am interested in hearing more about Hope Squads. And the area I came from had some problems within their schools, and here in Utah. And how can schools get more training and learn more about this program, and even communities? How can we go about getting more training about suicide prevention?
Thanks for the question, Judy. Greg, that's
I think it's a great question, Judy, and I appreciate you calling in. It's something that, you know, as we've been talking about in the show, that it's a difficult topic, and it's difficult to get buy-in for it. First thing I would suggest is you work with your PTA and your parents' organization, your community council, so that the parents understand the importance of it, and then you start working with your school administration, your school counselors, school social workers, so they start seeing that it's important enough to parents. A lot of times I'm talking as the associate superintendent for Provo School District, not every one of my principals at every time is interested in doing this, so I have to quietly remind them how important it is, because as educators we get caught up in academics and testing and test scores and other things that we forget sometimes the emotional part. And then I think the other part is that relationship and partnership with NAMI, partnership with the mental health, what Kim's doing with Valley and Wasatch Mental Health in Provo and other mental health organizations. They're the experts. We try to train, identify, and then refer to them for help. So I think anytime you can get parent investment, parent support, so that the school knows this is a critical component for you, then I think that school will reach out and support it.
Let's bring in Kelly Peterman from the Trevor Project, Senior Crisis Services Manager. Kelly Peterman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the Trevor Project. What is this?
Sure. So the Trevor Project is the leading national organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services specifically to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth.
And is suicide higher prevalence among this population?
Yes. So LGBTQ youth are much more likely to attempt suicide than their straight peers. They're actually four times more likely to attempt for a number of reasons. And so we exist specifically to work with this population, but certainly anyone who's thinking about suicide or thinking about hurting themselves can call us and talk to us as well.
Who's the Trevor of the Trevor Project?
Oh, that's a great question. So the Trevor Project was actually started in response to a short film that came out called Trevor. It actually won the Academy Award for Short Film in 1994. And it was just a sort of funny short film about this young person named Trevor who lived in a rural area in America. And, you know, people were starting to sort of catch on to his sexual orientation before he even really said anything. And he really was ostracized as a result of that and then attempted suicide. It has a happy ending, and it got a lot of attention at the time. But when the producers actually were approached by HBO to show this film, they were looking for some resources specifically for people who were going through what Trevor, the main character, was going through in the film, and there weren't any. So they created the Trevor Project in response to that.
So that's what you're hoping for all the LGBT teens, a happy outcome. There, you say it's four times more likely to attempt suicide. What are some of the reasons?
Sure. So LGBT youth are much more likely to attempt because they just have more risk factors associated with sexual orientation or gender identity. They often face more harassment or violence at school. They often are kicked out of their homes for coming out. They often face a lot more rejection in general. Young people face rejection for a number of reasons, but when coming out, it can be particularly difficult. A lot of LGBT youth report losing at least one really good friend when they come out, and we have noticed that young people are coming out at a younger age, so they might not have the skills to cope with what happens when they're rejected as a result of that. Also, just general gender nonconformity is a huge risk factor. Lack of LGBTQ role models within the community or even at large, just people who are in the spotlight. We're starting to see more LGBT role models, but we're definitely needing some more. So just in general, being LGBTQ and being young, they face a lot more prejudice and fear and hate, not just as a community at large, but even within their own families, within their own schools, and even within their own religious communities.
So suicide prevention obviously is the goal. What are the main factors there? And obviously, there's the hotline.
Sure. Trevor, we offer a variety of services for LGBTQ youth who are in crisis or thinking about suicide. One of them is our 24/7 hotline. People, trained counselors, volunteers actually are there 24/7 to answer calls. You don't have to be thinking about suicide or be imminently at risk of hurting yourself to call. You can actually just call if you just really need to talk to someone, if you're feeling really alone, if you're feeling really isolated, or if you're feeling actually in danger, if you're a young person who is experiencing abuse, just any number of reasons, you can call us and talk to us and feel less alone. We also have an in-school program called our Lifeguard Workshop Program, where we send trained volunteers into schools and really work with young people. It's more to facilitate a conversation than to sort of come at them and lecture and teach. It's to really talk about words and the power and impact of words associated with LGBTQ people and just terms in general. We really want people to think about what they're saying and how it affects other people. And then we also recognize that young people themselves are gatekeepers. And so we want to teach them warning signs and really destigmatize help-seeking behavior so that they can reach out to their peers and reach out to a parent or a teacher or an educator as well if they see warning signs in other young people.
Well, thank you very much. We've been joined here by Kelly Peterman, the Trevor Project, Senior Crisis Services Manager. The website, by the way, is thetrevorproject.org. Thank you.
Sure.
We heard about a segment of the population, gay teens, four times more likely to attempt suicide. Hotline there and other services with the Trevor Project. And for the rest of the hour, of course, Greg Hudnall with the Provo School District and Kim Kettle with Valley Mental Health. Later in the program, I want to talk a little bit more about the Hope Squads and talk about chronic mental illnesses. What would we do there with Kim Kettle? We do have a couple of callers. Let's bring them in. First up is Kathleen in Providence. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I haven't heard anything about, having experienced this as a mother, the problem during the end of the semester, with final tests are coming up, there's a higher percentage of kids, and now I'm to college age, and I realize you're talking about the public school system, but college age is more prone to suicide, and there may be a mother out there who may not be aware of this and need to watch kids that seem anxious before they take their exams at the end of the semester. Something can be a problem. And the other thing I want to point out, having also a son who did threaten suicide, is it's an ongoing thing. You don't cure it in one night, and I found a great deal of help associating with NAMI, which I highly recommend, has been very helpful with that situation in our home. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Kim Kettle, do you want to address either of those two points?
Sure. I appreciate that question because you bring up a really good point. We do focus, you know, I know we're talking a little bit today about the public school setting, but I think it's important to realize that suicide and thoughts of suicide, it transcends and it is the same across the board. So the signs and symptoms and things that you would look for, I say to anybody, look for if anything seems out of the ordinary with an individual that you associate with, that is something that you want to probably be concerned about and talk about further with that individual. So everybody is the eyes and ears for everybody else, and that's why this connectedness is so important. And again, if you see that they're anxious around testing time, or they're having a hard time, or it's extra stress, take some time to sit down with that person and say, you know, is everything okay? How are you feeling about things? Things are going to be okay. We've kind of found that one of the differences between those who actually attempt and complete suicide and those who don't go that route at all generally is the fact that those who don't are more likely to problem solve and see alternatives to their problems and alternatives to their problems where others are not. And I think that it's important that sometimes it's just sitting down and talking with someone and helping them understand there's lots of different ways we can solve this. If you're anxious about this, let's do this. You know, different ways to solve that problem. So I think that is, does that kind of answer your question, Kathleen, on that?
I believe we say goodbye to Kathleen, but I think that does. The NAMI or another organization, good to get some help.
You know, I have to tell you, I love NAMI. I love that Greg talked about that and that people are bringing this up. I have actually attended one of their provider classes, and it is amazing. I refer people to them because I think it is important that you feel support and that you're not out there on your own. There are other parents. There are other individuals that go through this, and you might be going through this on your own, and they are a great resource and a great support, and I would recommend that to anybody.
You know, the other thing that I would add on, just listening, because these are important factors. Kathleen, comment about that age. If you look at Dr. Gray's study out of the University of Utah, his longitudinal study on suicide over a 10-year study, the age group that we lose the most children that do complete, not attempt, but do complete, is 17-year-old males. So, and that's right in that ballpark of being a senior. A lot of pressures, a lot of things that they're dealing with. And so her point is a very, very good point.
So times of pressure and stress would be of concern.
Yes. Yeah, 17 and 18-year-olds has the highest percentage when you look across, that age group over that 10-year period. And so what Kim mentions is, you know, that being involved and providing that support, I think, is very important for that age group.
Let's bring in another caller. This is Liz in Salt Lake City. Liz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. I just, as a mom, I just wanted to know if there's a manual or literature information that we can have access to.
Yeah, good question. Where to go for information?
You know, there's a lot of great sites out there right now that are available. One of the fun things that we're just getting ready to kick off in the state, I just finished my doctorate. My dissertation was actually writing the manual for K-12 schools for suicide prevention. And that will actually go online hopefully this July. It'll be available to every school, every community across the state. We'll have it on state organizations' websites. Two of the ones that I have found to be the most helpful, number one is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You can go online and put that in. It'll get you right to it. And then the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. They opened up all of their information when I was doing my research and were very supportive to allow us to have that information.
Kim Kettle, a place that the parents can go or others can go for information?
You know, you can go to NAMI. You can also go to any local your public mental health center, and they would have information. And we have booklets and things that we can give you, but also even just take the opportunity. People would, you know, a therapist, if they had a minute, could even come out, give you information, and briefly talk about some things if you needed help with that as well.
Liz, does that give you some information?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Liz. And we're talking about suicide in Utah. You probably know, at least if you've been listening, you know by now that Utah has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, especially among young men. And we're in the middle of the suicide belt, which runs through the Rockies. 65% of Utah male youth suicide completers had been diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder, such as depression. Four times as many males as females commit suicide. More females attempt than males. And 63% of Utah male youth suicide completers had contact with juvenile justice system. Some of the factors. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for Utah males ages 10 to 44. We're talking about this with Greg Hudnall with the Provo School District and with Kim Kettle with Valley Mental Health. We have about 6 minutes left in this hour, and if you would like to join the conversation, we would love to have your question or comment at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or an email through to us directly from upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. The number, once again, toll-free, 1-800-826-1495. Kim Kettle, I wanted to talk about, and one of our callers, Kathleen, made reference to this, that the problem, I think, with her son is ongoing for a long time. And a lot of times I imagine these problems are ongoing for a long time, especially if someone is dealing with a chronic mental illness. How to help in that situation? It's an ongoing, long-term problem.
You know, and she brings up a really good point. This sometimes isn't something that just goes away. It can, but there are individuals, and a lot of the individuals that I work with will always have thoughts of suicide, and that will always be an option for them. And what we work with them on is, as long as they're willing to talk about it on an ongoing basis and are willing to discuss alternative options, that we've learned to not be afraid of that. In fact, I am more open to the fact that they're willing to talk about it, because that tells me it's out there, we can openly have conversations, and that's another thing that scares a lot of people. I do not get scared by that. As long as they're in treatment and they're getting the help and they're open to the help, it's helping other people realize that this might be the thing that they deal with, even with medication, their whole life, and we just always have to be aware and always kind of have to have our eyes out and be open to talking about it and never have it just be a one-time conversation, that it has to be ongoing.
And what about this question of back to Greg Hudnall for this, question of clusters? That was always a worry, I guess, especially in the media and other groups. Let's not talk about it because it might provoke copycats.
You know, it's one of the most frightening things. I was actually involved with Moab, where we lost 5 students within a short period of time. 13 had signed. You have the clusters, and then you have the suicide pact. And it's frightening because a lot of times you don't know how many kids are involved. You don't know the information that's going out there. And in the Moab situation, we had 13 students who had signed a suicide pact. And by the time we were able to stop it, we had lost 5 kids in probably 3 or 4 days. There were 13 that had signed a suicide pact. And so the other 7, 8 kids were able to get hospitalized. The cluster, you saw a little bit of it, but not a lot. But we've seen it this year in some schools up north where one student completed and then short period of time later, another student. And that's one of the things we try to do, is to really train our teachers and our staff and our parents, especially after we've had a suicide in a community, that we really try to go in and educate church leaders and parents and the community to be on the watch. Kim talks about those kids that are always struggling with depression and are always on the verge of suicide. Those are the ones that we immediately try to intervene and get help for. It's one of the things that frightens me, and Kim mentioned it earlier, is that it is not uncommon, even in our school system, we're the 9th or 10th largest in the state, it is not uncommon for us to have 2nd and 3rd graders on suicide watch. Hmm. We lost a 4th grader just 4 or 5 years ago who had taken his life on campus. So in the old days, when I was doing counseling and therapy, people would ask me, what age groups do you watch for? We used to say, 7th through 12th grade. We literally now are watching kids as young as 1st and 2nd and 3rd graders.
Wow, troubling.
Can I say,
go ahead, and then we'll bring in our caller.
I was just going to say with them, I appreciate what Greg brought up, because the concern that sometimes happens, or that we see a lot of, is that parents and a lot of adults feel like that young children can't struggle with depression or anxiety or any of these other issues. And so in a way, they don't watch for those things. And so it is what Greg said. Again, this transcends all different age groups. And it's just important that any time you see a change in the behavior of an individual that is significant, that just doesn't feel right, check it out.
Even if they're that young. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's bring in another caller, Whitney in Logan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hey, I just wanted to thank you, your guests for talking about this important issue. I work up at Utah State University with Residence Life Program. All the students who live on campus are under my responsibility and my staff. And we do deal with a lot of students with mental health issues, and it's not uncommon to have several suicide attempts in an academic year. And I just want to reiterate the importance of just being direct about it. If someone hasn't been thinking about suicide, you're not going to plant that idea in their head. They're not going to say, oh, that's a great idea, I'm going to go do that. But if you're worried that someone's thinking it, you really need to find out. And being direct is so important. And if you don't feel like you can, because that's a really difficult, scary thing to do, especially for peers, and we know that those are the most effective people to be doing it, but it's really scary, is to just make sure you talk to someone else about it. Bring it to someone's attention so someone can intervene in some way and not just let it go because you just are too scared to do anything. That's what we find a lot. And then we also deal a lot with the impact of suicidal ideation and suicidal talk. How that impacts roommates on campus. And we're always working closely with the Counseling Center to either do a group session to talk through things with that particular roommate and how can we all support that person, or, I just can't handle this, it's too much stress on me, I need to move. There are just so many other considerations to everyone around, and I just appreciate the topic being brought up because it's a real life thing that we deal with every day in our jobs.
Thank you so much, Whitney. Appreciate that. We have reached the end of our program. I was going to have our guests talk about another segment of the population that we sometimes don't to focus on. That's the elderly, more likely to commit suicide as well. Maybe as a parting shot, just 30 seconds for this. Greg Hudnall, could you tell us again a couple of websites that you mentioned before? Go for more information.
Yeah, I think if you look at Sprock is a good website that has suicide prevention. There's four that I would just suicide awareness, Voices of Education, National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and then of course the Suicide Prevention Resource Center.
And Kim Kettle, very quickly, resources.
Go to your public mental health centers, and they are in every county, and I would say go ahead and go there because they're going to have any information that you need, and they would have people that could help you with anything that you might be going through.
Suicide in Utah has been our topic for the hour. Those are resources to go for more information. Greg Hudnall with the Provo School District, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Kim Kettle with Valley Mental Health, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.